This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Well, it'll be interesting to reflect on what we can do with all the time on our hands if someday machines do a lot of what had been our work. A new book argues that if you don't like the widening gaps between rich and poor that we're seeing now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Daniel Susskind is a fellow in economics at Oxford. The book is called A World Without Work, Technology, Automation, and How We Should Respond. Thank you for joining us.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
You see inequality, one of the big topics of discussion, both at places like Davos and on this radio program, inequality as a prequel to what happens when automation and artificial intelligence become pervasive in the workplace?
That's right. We tend to think of worries about automation and technological unemployment as being sort of distant, looming threats that we don't have to worry about quite yet. And one of the arguments I make in the book is that actually these two problems, technological unemployment and inequality, are very, very closely related. Today, the main way that we share out prosperity in society is through the market, and in particular, for most people, through the labor market. And inequality is what happens when some people get far more than others from that market mechanism. And technological unemployment is where some people get nothing at all.
Now, as for your central thesis about what technology might do to the workplace, to workers, some economists agree with you. This time is different with technology. Others, you've heard them and you engage this, some say that this time more and better human jobs will accrue, even perhaps after a period of disruption. Mm. But what's interesting reading your book, under both those scenarios, fewer jobs or more jobs over time, you're still worried that inequality will expand in dangerous ways.
That's right. I mean, anyone who picks up the book expecting a story of a sort of dramatic technological big bang in the next few years, after which lots of people wake up to find themselves without work, they're going to be disappointed, because that's not what the book's about. Now, what I'm arguing is that as we move through the 21st century, more and more people are going to find they're not able to make the sorts of economic contributions that they might have hoped to make in the 20th century. It's not a world without any work at all, but I do think it's a world without enough well-paid work for everyone to do.
Well, let's talk about some of your prescriptions. Universal basic income is discussed a lot, but even beyond that, you have this idea of a scenario where perhaps the state government buys a stake of technology companies. And what would it do with such a stake?
The solution for now is not things like universal basic income and increased roles for the state. I think the challenge for now and over the next 10 years is largely an educational one. Now, there's going to be plenty of work to be done. The question is, do people have the skills and capabilities to do that work? But further afield, looking further into the 21st century, I do worry that there might not be enough well-paid work, full stop. And the argument that I'm making in the book is that if the labor market is a less effective way of sharing out prosperity in society, because people are unable to get a good enough wage for the work they're able to do, then we'll need the state to take a larger role in sharing out that prosperity. Now, in the 21st century, technological progress is going to make us more prosperous than ever before. The economic pie, if we think of the economy as a pie, economic pies around the world are going to get larger and larger. The challenge is going to be how to slice up that pie and share it out when our traditional ways of doing so, paying people for the work that they do, are far less effective.
You don't leave it there, though, in the book. You also talk about, if there is less work to do and we can figure out a way to compensate ourselves or get compensated somehow. I mean, compensation is the wrong word. If we can figure out a way to gain a livelihood in some way so we can eat and so forth, what do we do with the extra time? I mean, most of my time is here in the studio working, and it's probably the same way with you.
Yes.
If we free up time, I mean, I guess hobbies or volunteering and helping with education. I don't know. What do you suggest here?
Yeah, and I think this is another one of the big challenges presented by a world with less work. Not how do we share out income in society, but how do we share out meaning and purpose in a world where work no longer sits at the center of some people's lives. And this is a question that doesn't have much to do with economics at all. And what I try and do in the book is look more closely at this relationship between work and meaning, you know, how important is work as a source of meaning? You know, lots of people in the United States actually don't get a particularly strong sense of identity or purpose from their work. They don't think their work makes a meaningful contribution to the world. And so I investigate this relationship between work and meaning and then ask, well, in a world with less work, might there be other sources of meaning and purpose? And what might we do, you know, what policy proposals might there be to shape not how people spend their time in the labor market, but how people spend their time in leisure, you know, not labor market policies, but leisure policies. And it sounds quite radical, but in a sense, we already do it. You know, if I think of the UK, you know, we have policies to make entrance to museums free. We have policies to stop, you know, the most beautiful pieces of art from leaving the country. We try and make sure every child learns to swim and cycle. You know, in a sense, the pension system is a form of leisure policy. We, you know, the state has taken the decision only really to sort of support leisure and subsidize leisure in the twilight of life. And what I'm arguing is that, you know, the future of work, if the future of work is a world with less work, then it starts to become less and less about the future of work and more about the future of leisure. And these conversations about how we spend our time and how we might want others in the communities and the societies we live in to spend their spare time as well, I think are going to become increasingly important.
Daniel Susskind is a fellow in economics at Balliol College at Oxford. His new book is called A World Without Work, Technology, Automation, and How We Should Respond. Thank you very much.
Thank you.